Moral Revolution community, welcome back to our podcast. I'm so glad you joined us today. We're going to dive into all things God's design for healthy sexuality. Let's talk about it.
What's up? What's up? Welcome back to the Let's Talk About It podcast. We have something extremely special for you today, but I happen to be walking in pretty blind.
It's so. A surprise.
Yeah, basically. What's going on today, everyone?
Yeah, so we wanted to do something new and something fun. A lot of our podcasts, we take time, obviously, to study, to go through, to kind of lay it out, and we come up with some form of plan to make sure we're communicating the information as logical and as clearly as possible.
As practically as possible.
Yeah, and practically, yeah. And this one's unscripted.
Right.
This is like a real life conversation here that we'd have in our office.
Yeah.
But I did a little research.
Okay. So it's not totally unscripted, just kind of unscripted.
Yeah, kind of unscripted.
I'm unscripted.
Just to float us through, yeah.
Okay, great.
Here's the real test. Okay. We're actually putting Ellis through the test now to see. No, but we're talking about everybody's favorite topic to cringe on.
Yeah.
Purity culture.
Oh, ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. So we're just going to have a discussion and walk through it. I've got some points for us to navigate through.
Yeah.
But having an in-person conversation that we'd have in the office.
Well, and we do have these conversations in the office
totally,
all the time. I mean, but just by nature of the fact that we talk about sexual issues so much, that's kind of our, you know, MO around here at MR. And I think people love to lump us in with purity culture and the purity movement.
Yep.
I wouldn't put us in that category, would you?
No, I've been trying to dig us out of that category.
Right. Honestly. How's that going?
I think pretty good.
Yeah.
Fun disclaimer. Okay, so if you're new to the purity culture and you don't know what that is, just to start with, the purity culture was a movement that started in the 1990s by mostly evangelical church.
Oh, see, the research is coming in.
Focused on, well, just if you're newer or younger, focused in on the message of abstinence was their big message.
Yeah.
We can get into some more details of that later.
Well, and abstinence isn't a bad thing.
No, it's not.
No, but I think one of the dangers of purity culture is the way that they approached the topic.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that.
Okay,
today.
Let's talk about it.
Can I tell you a fun fact?
I don't know if you
know this.
Okay.
We actually worked really hard till about 6 months ago to not use the word purity in Moral Revolution.
Oh, and then I threw it out the window when I took over the social media?
Well, sort of.
Yeah.
But because for so long, purity sparked so much anxiety and so much shame from so many people.
Totally.
We tried to reframe it under sexual wholeness or God's design.
Okay.
Because we would say the word purity, and before we could finish the sentence,
it would trigger people.
There was the fight, flight, or freeze mode that would come out. But since we're starting to go, okay, actually, there's a whole new generation that's entering into this conversation or that's been subjected to the conversation.
Totally.
They don't have a lot of them don't have all the negative connotations that the word purity meant.
Totally.
And so that's why I was like, yeah, let's test the waters again with social media.
Yeah. Well, and I also think, you know, when we're talking to the younger generation, when you look at Gen Z, I see a generation that has so much zeal, and especially Gen Z who's encountered, you know, salvation and the power of God.
Yeah.
They go, oh, I'm all in. Let's go for it. I don't want to hold anything back.
Yeah.
And I'm all in.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I think I don't see the danger in calling purity what it is as long as we do a good job of defining what it is.
I'd say for the middle of the 2000s, I don't know how you say it, 2015, give or take 2 or 3 years.
I think it's like the 20-aughts.
20-aughts, yeah.
Is that, wait, are you talking 2000 through 2010?
Or 2010, 2020.
Oh, the 20-teens.
20-teens?
Huh, I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll go with 20-teens.
Some of our social media content was literally written about trying to differentiate what purity culture has said and like, what's the actual truth that was is mixed up in here?
Yeah.
I asked one of my friends in the process of which, asked a couple of them. I said, hey, when you hear the word purity, what do you hear? Like, what do you think of?
Mm.
All my Christian friends are like, shame, guilt, I'm not doing enough, sexual, like, masturbation.
It's so sad.
Stuff. All my non-Christian friends said, oh, like 100%. Like, something's completely pure, like 100% unfiltered, unhindered. Yeah. And I was like, wow, they have a better definition of what I think God intended than all the Christians do.
Which is crazy. Here's the thing is I grew up in church and I definitely was a witness to purity culture and aspects of the toxicity of the way, I won't even say the conversation, but the way the conversation was approached.
Yeah.
But I think that if you ask me what purity was, I would have it much more in line with what your unsaved friends say.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I think there are some of us who were in the midst of it and were able to see through to the heart of the message, yeah, despite how it was communicated. And I know that that's obviously not everyone's story. Yeah. But some of us exist.
And then go on in life and you grow up and then you lead the purity ministry because you're apparently like, I could see it through it all.
Well, apparently, yeah.
We started to mention this yesterday, but yeah, I didn't want to get too far into it.
Okay.
But what was your experience of, in youth group, the talk about sex or sexuality or modesty or that whole, everything that's covered inside of purity culture?
Totally. I think it was a mixed bag. You know, there was the one side of it that was like, just don't do it. True love waits.
Yep.
It's sex is bad. And then, you know, there is the element of like, yeah, but it's good the second you get married. So, you know, you better be able to flip that switch real quick. So there was that message. But I will say I had some leaders in my life who talked pretty candidly about sex and sexuality who were willing to really go to the heart of the matter and have some formative conversations that I appreciate. I will say, you know, there's still the traumatic experiences that live with you. I remember being at church camp. I think I was in like sixth grade.
Okay.
Probably six. I don't know. How old are you in sixth? 12?
Yeah.
11? 12 in sixth grade? Around there. Yeah. So we're at summer camp. And there was like this small groups portion at summer camp, and the small group leaders were leading a talk that day on modesty, which I would say that for...
Which is always a girls only conversation.
Yeah.
The like, guys are never brought into it.
Right. Why aren't we talking to the guys about modesty?
Issue number 7.
It's like girls are going to wear one piece bathing suits, but guys can have on these like muscle tank tops that go all the way down. They like leave nothing to the imagination at all. Yeah. But yeah, that's totally fine. So, you know what I mean?
There's no double standards here.
No double standards here. And that was one thing about purity culture that I think a lot of people take issue with at its core was there were double standards. They put the onus of responsibility on sexuality a lot more women than on men, which is super unfortunate.
Yeah.
Super unfortunate. Go ahead.
I want to go on that in a minute, but I want to hear your story. But
okay.
I may go off on that one in a second.
Okay. So please do. Don't lose it. Don't lose it. And so anyway, I'm in the small group. And this, the leaders have decided this is the day we're going to talk to the sixth grade girls about modesty. And I don't know how much of a plan they really had going in. And and so there was at one point where one of the leaders in the group kind of went rogue. And she decided they were talking about modesty, about how you make boys stumble if you dress a certain
way.
Just
for clarity, when they were talking about modesty, they weren't actually talking about your holistic persona. They were talking about the clothes you wear, right?
100%.
Yeah.
The clothes you wear. And she goes around the room and she was like, okay, we're going to do a little experiment. I'm going to go around the room and I'm going to tap you on the shoulder. And if I've tapped you on the shoulder, you're going to go to this side of the room. If I don't tap you on the shoulder, you're going to go to the other side of the room. So she goes through and she probably taps 2/3 of the people in the room and they go to one side and 1/3 of the people in the room go to the other side. And at the end, she goes, the people that I tapped, and by the way, I got tapped.
Okay.
The people that I tapped, no one knows what she's talking about at this point. The people that got tapped are dressed immodestly. And if a male saw you right now, he would stumble.
No.
Yeah. I cringe thinking about that. I mean, I still can't believe that happened. And the irony of the situation is I was high school, I was as tomboy as they came. I mean, I wore gym shorts.
You're 12-year-old.
Yeah.
12 years
11,
old.
12, sixth grade.
Dude, I don't know if at 12 years old, boys fully knew that girls were existing and didn't have cooties at that point. Right. You're going to make them stumble.
And let's say now they do. I mean, now we have the statistics to know that the average 11-year-old has seen 20 hours of pornography.
20 hours.
20 hours. And we're not talking about like just two people having sex. We're talking about the most graphic porn that you could imagine.
You have to. Like,
because that's the porn that's easiest to find from what I hear.
Yeah. Apparently you have to search for 13 to 15 minutes to find non-violent porn.
Totally.
If you're just happen upon it.
So if the average 11-year-old has seen about 20 hours of pornography. Goodness. So that's today, and things are much more available than they were when I was that age. Yeah. But when I was that age, it was I was as tomboy as they came. I wore gym shorts down to my knees. I was like in baggy t-shirts. I had a ponytail. I mean, I still have a ponytail in today, but I mean, it's ponytails every day. I was as tomboy as they came.
And you were a stumbler.
I was causing dear someone Lord. To stumble. So yeah, that conversation is definitely, I look back and I go, oh, that should have been handled way better than it was.
What did the rest of the counselors do? Did they go along with it or did somebody go, what
no
the
No one
heck?
Said, I think, people were so flabbergasted in the moment and no one knew how to like handle this because this person had just kind of gone rogue and no one wants to embarrass her in front of everyone. Yeah. But I do remember talking to a couple counselors afterward and they were like, we can't believe she did that. And now having, you know, the ability to look back and understand how formative those moments were, I realize they're processing this through the lens of this will stay with these kids forever. And this will, you know, forge the way that they think about modesty for the rest of their life. I didn't really have that foresight in that moment.
Yeah.
But I do think that it was helpful for me to see the reaction of the other leaders going, that was so unacceptable. Yeah. We're taking this to leadership and she's going to have to apologize. And I think she came back and apologized the next day. That part's fuzzy, but it was unfortunate. I think it was a good thing for my sake that I saw them react the way that they did.
Saw them going, what the heck?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if you were on, like not looking at them at that time? Like I did a lot of study. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of YouTube videos and like listened to people talk about their problems with purity cultures to go, okay, I know my experience, but what's so many centered around this that purity culture, we'll get into the virginity sex side in a few minutes, but this modesty thing was all for women. It was 100%. Only women, and it taught women to shame themselves, and it taught them that their sexuality is dangerous for men. It's not that it's powerful. It's not that like it's something to be proud of. It's not something that God made you this way. It's basically a threat
totally
to yourself. And so you either hate it or I've even seen some people in my life later as they got older be so burnt by purity culture and by that they're causing men to stumble with their body and their sexuality that they took it as their power. They're going, oh, actually, this is my power. Great, I'll use it. And so they then take their power and they go.
It's an overcorrection.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's one of the things I think it bothers me is how purity culture has taught men that they're the victims. We're just so powerless. Like if a woman dresses, it's completely like it's all on the woman to control your sex drive. Like it's codependency. Uh-huh. You can't control somebody else the way that they treat you. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I guess I'm curious to know in those conversations, obviously modesty was so geared toward females. What was being said to young males at that point?
Man. I honestly don't remember a lot about that. I think that there was the things that I remember taking away from those conversations. I'm sure that there was more said, but the thing that I remember walking away with is just like, oh, if you're you shouldn't have sex before you're married.
Yeah.
And like if you lust, you should cut your eye out. And
cut your eye out. To this day, I don't know that I've ever seen, for sure not met, a single human who has cut their eye out because they lusted.
Yeah.
Just for the record.
Yeah.
I thought I'd put that out there. Yeah. No one's done that that I know of.
That and it's just something you're going to struggle with your whole life.
Yeah.
It was so powerless.
Yeah.
And it was so, it's so frustrating to me because I feel like our sexuality, I don't always remember specifics of details. This is how my brain works. I remember big picture things, but I just remember walking away from those conversations, knowing, you know, sex in marriage is good until then it's not, it's bad. It's taught as like dangerous.
Yeah.
Like it's dangerous to you. It's dangerous to the people. Like, it felt like a canister of gasoline next to the fire. And it was just like, don't, whatever you do, don't let a spark hit it.
Yeah.
Because it'll explode and go everywhere.
It's a fear tactic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just so afraid to do that. And so even with the whole modesty conversation, I wish it went both ways.
Yeah.
But I also wish at large, I feel like the purity culture addressed behaviors rather than heart posture.
Mm.
So approaching the conversation of modesty, great. Let's talk about that. Let's talk up to men and women about that. But I think your clothing, the way what you wear is a representation of what's going on inside of you. Mm. And so if you're a dude and you're wearing those big sleeveless things, sleeveless shirts where everything's cut off and you can see all your muscles and stuff, I'm like, hey, what's going on there?
What are you compensating for?
Yeah. What are you compensating for? What are you, what attention are you trying to get?
Yeah.
And sometimes you're just lifting and it's easier to move about. But sometimes I'm like, bro, you haven't been to the gym. Like,
right?
this is not about comfort.
Yeah.
Or like when women wear certain low cut things or tight things.
Totally.
I'm not judging them going, oh, this, but I'm just like, makes me wonder. And at this point in my life, I don't know if I want to say this on a podcast, but, it just starts to break my heart because I'm not saying everybody is this way, but for a lot of the women that I know who have seen their journey and stories, their clothing represents some hurt inside, some wounds inside. And so rather than having the modesty conversation and then shaming and belittling and devaluing women because they wear something.
Yeah.
What if we sat back and looked at going, hey, like you said, it's so passionate about Gen Z. What's going on in your whole heart, your whole being?
Yeah.
Like what's going on there? Because from your heart is the wellspring of life.
Yeah.
Your clothing is a reflection of this. Maybe you just weren't taught, or maybe you're just emulating what you see on, maybe you don't know differently, but I think addressing the conversation from heart posture rather than behavior or skin square inch of skin being shown.
Totally.
It's just a drastically different thing.
Well, and I think that it's important to say that when we talk about what purity culture got wrong, it's like, we're not saying that the message, like some of the things that they said weren't right or true, but we are saying that the approach could have been much better.
Yeah.
And in some cases, the approach was definitely wrong.
Yep.
It was fear-based. It wasn't like, hey, we are for human flourishing and health because God is for human flourishing and health. He tells us in John 10:10 that he came to give us abundant life.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the perspective that God approaches us with.
Yep.
That's not necessarily the perspective that these conversations have been approached with.
Yeah.
And so we're not saying that the...
it's true. It was never about fulfillment. Like if you taking that approach going, okay, God is actually here for your fulfillment.
Yep.
Most of it came out of like that intense discipline, that self regimen, that like, is it asceticism? Like the where you cut off everything that could give you pleasure. It's like the opposite of hedonism.
Oh, I have no idea.
I think it's asceticism, something like that.
Okay.
It's a big word that I heard Elizabeth say. And so I'm like,
she's so smart.
I'm going to use that one. It's in the Bible somewhere. but it was based off of that, like, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, not this, get away from this, fear this.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, if he's here for your fulfillment, how do we walk out fullness of our sexuality if you're single or if you're dating or if you're married? But it felt like it was just a no, no, no for singleness. And then we never get married, it'll be fine.
The reality is God doesn't give us rules to control us. He gives us boundaries that protect us.
Yeah.
We actually posted this on MR today. Yeah. God gives us boundaries that protect us. In fact, God was never after controlling us.
Yeah.
Like if you look at back to the very beginning of creation, he gave humans a choice.
Yeah.
Humans have the choice to engage, connect with, and be in relationship with God or not. Like, that's the choice that he gives us. But he does lay out what he believes boundaries will be that protect us. And he say, it's your choice whether you live within these boundaries or not. And whether you live within them will, you know, you'll live according to what you believe.
Will determine your consequences and the results of your actions.
100%. But in Proverbs, scripture lays out the seven things that God hates as like six things that God hates and seven things that are abominations to him. And every single one of those six things are something that would hurt you. Mm-hmm. So the things that God hates are things that bring us pain. And it's wild that we get up in arms about God having boundaries. Culture is big on boundaries until God has them. You know, and then God's like, hey, here's some boundaries. And the irony is those boundaries are there to protect us. Mm. They're not even there to protect him. He doesn't need protection.
Yeah.
They're there to protect us and our relationship. And so, you know, we have to come to this conversation around honestly, life, but for sure, sex and sexuality, yeah, with the perspective of God's not giving us a list of rules to follow so he can control us. He's giving us boundaries that if we live within his design, will lead to a more whole and flourishing life.
Yeah. It's fascinating. As you're even talking, it makes me think, I was like, man, the purity culture was so rooted in fear and in control. And then one of the things I've been thinking about that I haven't been able to piece together until just now is like the what we try to communicate now is God's heart for humanity through sexuality. And how do you find fulfillment in that in every season?
Yeah.
And similar, like, try to summarize what you just said. It's like, I don't feel like most of purity culture ever communicated his heart towards us. It was, there was very much a sense of fear and of control, which manifests through the motivation of manipulation, shame, all those things. Yeah. But then I look back, I was like, okay, what was, you know, 20, 30 years before that? The previous generation was the sexual revolution. It was everybody having sex anywhere, everywhere. And so when those people are then having kids or getting to the point where they're going, we want to do this differently for the next generation, they came up with purity culture.
Yeah.
Trying to save, I think, the 90s kids.
It was a compensation.
Yeah, it was.
And it's a cycle.
And
is
you
what
see,
it
that's
is.
Where we are now. So 30 years past purity culture, you see, even in our own culture now,
it's a free for all.
Like,
yeah,
people throwing off sexual restraint at all costs, yep, whether it's, you know, be with whoever you want, be whoever you want, like, yep, explore, experiment. And so we just kind of keep toggling back and forth between, we have no boundaries and everything's fair game in sex. Uh-huh. And then these intense sets of rules that kind of control you. And then now we're back here.
Well, what's insane is that all of that is in pursuit of a satisfied life. Like, we're always, all of us are trying to work toward a life where we are the most satisfied. I mean, we're inherently selfish, right? You know, we're constantly thinking, how can I be satisfied?
Yeah.
And at the same time, God's saying, I have satisfaction for you. Mm-hmm. It is only found in me. Nothing else will satisfy. All of these things that you're doing in the pursuit of satisfaction will only lead to dissatisfaction. I have the answer.
Until they're subservient.
Right.
Right? Like, money isn't bad. Food isn't bad. Sex isn't bad.
Right.
But when you pursue them as the highest thing,
totally,
they're the idol.
Right.
But when they're subservient to him and the order and structure he's created them in, mm-hmm, it leads to fulfillment.
Yeah, totally.
Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's just so backwards to me.
Yeah.
That it's like, okay, we're going to throw everything out in pursuit of satisfaction. And God's like, wait, I'm the satisfaction. Like, I am the way and the truth and the life. And yeah, and there's a God-sized hole in your heart. And the only way to get there is to pursue me.
God created sex, and he's not afraid to talk about it. But where do you go to learn about it? How do you know how he created it, how it affects us? How do we steward ourselves, whether we're single or dating or married, to steward our sexuality well? Where's the line? How does what's happening chemically inside of us as we're bonding and uniting to each other? How do you figure this out in a shame-free way? We've got The Naked Truth About Sexuality. It answers all these questions you have and a lot more. So check it out. Okay, let me steer this a little bit different.
Yeah, go for it.
When we went off there for a second about the throwing off sexual restraint.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've seen, and I'd love just to get your thoughts and take on, is a lot of the kids who are now adults, who grew up in the 90s in this purity culture, the youths of these days, they're on the internet.
I still feel like a youth, let's be honest.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
I'll be 28 next month.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway. Okay. The youths.
I just feel like, kids these days just keep getting smaller and smaller. I'm like,
really?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm still 21, 22 in my head until I try to do something. And my body's like, you are not. You are not. And I'm like, oh, they're just smaller humans. But you see a lot of them. I think one of the things that was promised was if you wait to have penis vagina sex, mm-hmm, like, because that's what all of purity culture was just about, abstinence was about. Right. Have you had sex or not? We had the rings. We had the promises. We had the thing.
Oh, yeah. And I had a purity ring. Did you?
No.
Okay. Well,
but I also
we had a whole ceremony. My parents gave it to me. I like pledged to remain a virgin until my wedding day. I think you're supposed to like give your purity ring back to your parents at some point, like on your wedding day.
Oh, I thought you gave it to your spouse on your wedding day.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. Regardless, it was an interesting practice that was there for a while.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm opposed to that. Mm-hmm. I grew up in West Virginia where men didn't wear jewelry, so that wasn't a thing.
Oh, okay, got it.
I mean, if I lived somewhere else, it may have been. I probably would have had one.
Look, but in the South, we were all blinged out.
Look like Mr. T walking through there. Hi. But when they promised, it was the promise of like, if I wait till marriage, because suddenly it's no, horrible, it's dirty, awful, rotten. Mm-hmm. Not just to have sex, but to even think about it or want it was almost disgusting.
Shameful.
Shameful, yeah. Yep. And then you get married and it's fine. And then everyone's getting married and they're like, suddenly I'm not having good sex.
Totally.
And they're overreacting now. And they're going back. I'm like, they're overreacting because they're like, oh, well, I didn't have good sex. I wish I wouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
And so they're turning around from the other side of marriage and kind of yelling back to all their single people, abort, abort, don't do this. And I feel like that's what we've been seeing in our culture.
Totally.
Is this over response of it didn't work out for me. I have some thoughts, but I don't want to keep talking. I want to throw out to you. What's your like? Well, how do you take that?
Okay. So I think there's two things to approach here. Two factors that have really led into this. One is purity culture made it seem like sex was bad. Mm. And that was, whether or not that was the intention, that's what was communicated.
Yeah.
This is bad. This is shameful.
Yeah.
And don't do it. Especially as kids get older and they start discovering their bodies and all of, you know, everything that comes with that. And then any bit of natural curiosity is then gone, like goes through this lens of this is bad and this is shameful.
Yes.
And so you're rehearsing that belief system over and over and over. Say you wait till you get married to have sex until you get married.
Yep.
And it's not like a light switch that you can just turn on and off.
Yeah.
And I've talked to so many people who are like, I thought it was bad. And then I genuinely could not
get myself there. Yeah.
And if I did it out of a duty to my spouse. And so then that reinforces this neural pathway in people's minds of like, okay, it was bad, but now I'm going to do it anyway because I feel like I have this duty to my spouse. And it reinforces this belief that sex is bad.
Yeah.
Even though you know that that's not the case. And the reality is sex is awesome. It's a gift.
Yeah.
It was God's gift to us. Like he created us he created sex for us.
Yeah.
And so I think coming at it with the approach of sex is bad has done a number on so many people. The second thing that I think has really contributed this is a false expectation. Whether purity culture gave people this false expectation or people just picked it up.
Yeah.
Although I don't know where they would have picked it up. It was probably from purity culture, to be honest with you. Which is, if I wait, then it will be awesome from day one.
I'm kind of owed.
Yeah.
I'm owed good sex. God owes me
a good sex life.
I did not touch myself or anybody else.
Right.
And now, or if I did touch myself or someone else, This is my punishment.
Yeah.
Is now we're struggling.
Totally. And that's just not how God works. And the reality is, you know, sex is, someone told me this the night before I got married. I'm so glad they gave me this little tidbit of wisdom. Yeah. They said, your sex life is like a life. And when a baby is first born on day one, they can't do anything for themselves. They like cry and sleep and poop and that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, some months go by and that baby starts to like crawl, you know, and eventually the baby starts to walk or talk or get some fine motor skills. Yeah. And eventually, you know, that baby is a full blown human out in the world who is capable of doing things.
Yeah.
And that's how your sex life is.
That's so
it's
good.
A life.
Yeah.
And when you first start anything, you can't expect to be great at it. And let me tell you that little tidbit of wisdom that was given to me the day before I got married was an expectation shifter for me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, well noted. And so the next day, you know, when, you know, the next day I was like, oh, I can't expect this to be amazing just because I waited. Right. You know what I mean? This is still the very first time I'm ever doing this with someone, but it is great because it's both of our first time and we're figuring it out.
Yeah, there is no, everyone expects the grand finale right out of the gate.
Yeah.
It's the best thing ever. And you're like, oh, like at this point, after I got married and started talking to some other people about sex, now I'm like, hey, on your honeymoon, it's a lot of eating, sleeping because you're exhausted from the like all the wedding prep and practicing having sex. Whether or not you're actually having sex, you're kind of practicing because you're like, let's figure it out.
Yeah.
But there is that expectation is it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And I love what you're saying. I think just to kind of add on some of the false expectations, it's the process that you grow and learn. And I think because some of these people that have had traumatic pasts from either choices they made or from toxic purity culture, which is honestly,
or honestly things that happened to them.
Things that have happened to them, or how purity culture has kind of indoctrinated them as with this just shame-based persona over sex and their own body and their own sexuality. It breaks my heart for two reasons. One, because I want to see, I'm like, actually, you're not supposed to be good at it yet. Mm-hmm. Let's get you a therapist. Let's get you a sexologist. Let's get you somebody that can help you figure out the practicals.
Yeah.
Who can help you walk through some of your trauma and some of the past in there. I mean, Kate has been on a podcast a lot, and she shared her story about like it wasn't good for years.
Right.
But that doesn't negate it. And so it breaks my heart because I see these people and they get in there and they go, oh, apparently I did all this wrong. I honored God for no reason. Right. And so they're like, oh, I should have done more sex and should have experimented, should have done all this stuff because it's horrible. And I'm like,
That is also an overcompensation.
Yeah. I'm like, I wish you would.
Compensation. Yeah. Yeah.
It breaks my heart for you, but it also breaks my heart that you're now preaching to a bunch of innocent people, warning them that following God is not going to benefit you.
Totally. That's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah. I'm like, and I understand from your experience and from your hurt. I just wish there was often more holistic conversations on the topic. And that's why I think purity culture was so bad because it focused solely on virginity rather than on holistic, your holistic experience of how are you treating your body? How are you treating your mind? And the ultimately, you deciding to steward your sexuality, you deciding to honor God with your body, you deciding to wait until marriage does not promise you a great spouse. It does not promise you a great marriage. It does not promise you a great honeymoon. But the things that you've built and cultivated in your life, in your history with God until that point are going to continue into your marriage. Because I don't know how to say it succinctly, except like it's not to a good sex life. It's unto God. Like it's you and your upright standing, your clear conscience. And the thing I love about like if actual purity is like purity of mind is like a clear conscience is like, oh, actually, I have no shame. I have no guilt. I have no, my mind is not subdivided. My heart is not subdivided. Firstly, to God, I don't have multiple irons in the fire. This is going to work out.
Yeah.
But then to my wife and to our marriage, there is no other option.
Right.
Like this is, it's me and you and we'll figure it out.
Well, and I think one of the things that you said.
And it's really fun to figure it out.
Yeah.
As long as we're, like you said, we're both going, hey, let's. We have the expectation of we're going to figure this out together.
And you're figuring it out in the context of safety.
Yeah.
The safety of relationship and covenant. Yeah. One of the things you said that I think is super key is you said purity of mind. And, you know, one of the things that you even mentioned earlier is that purity culture focused exclusively on virginity, right? But purity is so much more than virginity.
Mm-hmm.
Purity starts in your heart and in your mind.
Yeah.
And it's a wholehearted, it's a complete devotion to God. It's untainted by anything else. And one of the areas that you can steward in your life for in a pure way is your sexuality.
Yeah.
But it does not begin and end at sexuality. It begins in the heart and in the soul.
Can I also add, it doesn't begin or end at the altar.
Right.
How you steward it here influences how you're stewarding your marriage and later.
Totally. So. But also the way that you steward your sexuality in singleness is preparation for how you steward your sexuality in marriage.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like just because you get married doesn't mean that boundaries go out the window. Yeah. I'm sorry. We still have tons of boundaries.
Yeah.
Like we're not trying to sleep with anybody else. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And so
your attraction doesn't always, I mean, doesn't solely go this one person forever. You're like, oh, that person's attractive.
Totally.
What are you going to do with that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm just saying that, you know, purity culture approached a topic of purity and said it is all about sex. And the reality is purity is so much more about sex, and sex is one facet of your purity life.
Yeah.
How's your purity life going in your heart? How's your purity life going in your mind? Yeah. Like how are you doing holistically as a human being? Mm-hmm. How is your purity life going within your sexuality? Like that is a conversation to be had, but it's not the only conversation to be had.
Yeah. I love that. One of the things in that is in highlighting what purity is greater than. I know I keep saying purity is virginity, but I feel like there's a lot of stuff that kind of just got blocked up at that. Like, well, that was their whole message was purity was virginity. Mm-hmm. And one of the outcomes of that is if you didn't have your virginity. First off, lately I've realized I hate the term losing your virginity. Mm. I'm like, you do not lose anything. I didn't lose my virginity when I got married. Like it's so annoying to me. Like that, it's just this like, it feels like you have something and then it's gone, it's lost. I was like, no, I have a high value for virginity. Like, let me say that to start with. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, oh, I actually gave my first experience. I gave my innocence. I gave my sexual firstness to my wife. Mm-hmm. And that we're enjoying that experience together now.
I think it's also,
I know that's a longer phrase to say.
Totally. I think it's also super important to just keep in mind that there are people whose virginity was taken.
Yes.
Like, by force.
Yeah.
And that was not they chose to give it up situation. And so, you know, there's more nuance to just, I lost it or I gave
it. True. Very true. But yeah, like you were saying, it was so focused on virginity of the experience of this, the first time, and whether you had it with a boyfriend or you were raped or sexually abused or any of these things types have happened to you, then you suddenly instantly think, well, I'm dirty. I'm no longer pure. I'm no longer innocent. I'm no longer these things. I'm like, man, God is so redemptive. Like, in what other area of your life do you just disqualify yourself after one thing?
Okay, so like, if we're setting the record straight here, if purity culture would say you are or you are not pure based on your virginity status.
I would say none of us are pure without the righteousness of Christ. Mm. That's literally why he died.
Yeah.
Your purity is not based upon your behavior. It's upon his. Mm-hmm. And so 1 Corinthians, I want to say 5:16. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right? That like our righteousness is his.
Yeah.
Like we're getting his. So the same with our purity, the same our innocence. We get to steward that, I think. We get to steward that. We get to partner with him in that. But if we have made the wrong choices or we've been raped or wrong choices have been done to us, maybe it wasn't rape, but maybe it was sexual abuse and different things like this happen. He is so good at restoring and healing and renewing our innocence, our purity. Grafting into his right ways, his righteousness, that you're like, if you've been addicted to porn, I think you could be set free in a moment.
Yeah.
If you've had this stuff happen to you, but I believe you can be restored. If you've like, there's so many people who are like, yeah, I'm new to this whole conversation and I've lived a life.
Yeah.
Up until this point, I'm like, great. I'm sorry for your experience of this because I know, like we said earlier, it's the fulfillment of all the good that he has for you has not probably been experienced, but he is so good at renewing and restoring and redeeming our past that I'm like, that's the thing I think we cash in on and go, okay, I want to walk in this. And then as we get married, being aware of our histories, like because he's restored us, you are clean, you are pure, you are righteous. Like 1 John 1:9-10, like you look it up a lot of different places. He will cleanse us. He will heal us. Like, we all need that. That's what Jesus, right? And then, so as we were going into our marriages, just, I think it's something we also need to be aware of and communicate. Like going, hey, here's some of my history. Here's some triggers that may not be healed. Here's some stuff that has come up that we may need to talk about. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't negate you from being pure. Like one of the things that used to bother me all the time when people come up, I was like, oh, I used to be pure before I got married. And I was like, what happened when you got married?
Yeah, no kidding.
But it's the virginity purity thing. So it's like, oh, actually, it's what we're stewarding. It's what we're carrying. Mm-hmm. And it's the life that we're building. It's what he's building inside of us, what we're building with him, and what we get to build with our future spouse, if that's where our life goes.
Totally. Like you said, I think that's the entire reason that Jesus died on the cross for us is because sin had tainted us.
Yeah.
Like, that's the gospel. You know what I mean? We were dead in our sin and Christ died for us and he renewed everything about us. And so to make some sort of claim or assumption that something that we've done is too far outside of the realm of God's forgiveness or his sanctification or his redemption or his restoration, that's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane because it's not.
But we usually don't think about that in with the liar, just with our own sexual baggage.
Right.
Maybe it doesn't fit. The thing I'm trying to figure out how to say is that purity culture focused on your singleness and your virginity is so focused so short term and what you're doing in the next 3 years versus what kind of marriage that you're wanting to have. And it's hard to say that in such a way that doesn't say you're promising a marriage or you're promising a good marriage or promising totally. That. But it's like, no, but you are determining, you're building self-control. Yeah. You're building communication skills. You're learning how to communicate and not objectify another person. You're learning how to engage with yourself, your thoughts, feelings, and emotions outside of just the idea of the expression through your penis, so through your vagina, or getting your needs met through a physical act of intimacy. There's so much more you're building that sustains you inside of marriage. I'm not saying that marriage is going to be easy and smooth, but it's going to be a lot smoother and easier because you develop these things while you're single.
Right.
And if you don't develop while you're single, you're going to have to develop in your marriage. It's just a lot easier to do when you're single because you're only dealing with your own baggage rather than the other person's and all the triggers overlapping.
Totally. And there are things that only come out in the context of relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, when Daniel and I started dating, we were like, I think both of us thought, man, we've gotten to a pretty good place. You know, yeah. Like, we have done the work. And then, you know, you start dating and you start navigating conflict, and that conflict with someone else who's so close brings so much out of you.
Well, there's some new chambers in my heart I didn't know need cleaned out.
Exactly. And you're like, I thought we dealt with this. Like, I thought I had taken care of this. And the reality is, you know, that's what relationship does. Yeah. Relationship is sanctification. It's refining. And so I agree with you. I think if you can go there to a certain degree in stewarding your inner life when you're single and learning to do that, then you will have such a good foundation for when there's someone else added in.
Absolutely.
But if you're trying to build the foundation while there's another person in the equation, then, you know, yours and their heart is going to get hurt at some point.
You can do it.
You can
do
it.
It's more complicated.
Totally.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
If you were speaking to, say our entire audience today, every person who is listening to this was someone who had been negatively impacted by purity culture.
That
is the framework and the lens through which they have seen sexuality, and maybe they stumbled on this podcast today. What would you say to them?
I mean, I think first off, I'd have to say I'm so sorry. Mm. Like, I'm so sorry that the church has misrepresented God. I'm so sorry that your body, your sexuality, your view of sex, your view of marriage has become so binary. It's become so hateful. It's become so polarizing, even within yourself, within your own desires, that they've been so just belittled and pushed down and devalued, that God has never intended a great blessing to us to be so devaluing to us. Mm. And I'd love for you to get to experience his heart in sexuality, like his heart for you as a man, his heart for you as a woman, his heart for your marriage, his heart for connection, his heart for sex, like his heart for the exploration of intimacy, both physical and non-physical. And knowing that his heart for you is ultimately good, that the boundaries he puts up in place are to protect you for your fulfillment. And I know the church hasn't earned it, but I would ask you to give God a chance and to trust him with this. Seek him and give him a chance to prove himself in this, because there's so much more in store than what we've been told or taught.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. I think I would say, it all comes back to how much God loves you, and he loves you so much. Yeah. And he's a good father who gives good gifts. And so if your perspective has been anything other than, man, God loves you so much. And yeah, he calls you to live on a higher level, but it's because he loves you and he's called you to flourish. Yeah. He's called you to abundance. And that's what he has for you. And so if the message has been anything other than that, it's not God.
Yeah. I love that. It's so good. I mean, why not end on the love of God? That seems like a good place to point. Right?
So. Yeah.
So, hey, let us know what you think about this. Did you like this type of style where we're kind of engaging just in round table, square table conversations? Like where we're spitballing, or like you guys rambled too much? Also, let us know. We're developing our podcast schedules to go, hey, I'd love for you guys to tackle this topic. What you guys think about it? So
yeah, and we're also trying to tackle topics that people actually have thoughts and questions and opinions yeah. about. And so if you're like, man, I really wish that they would go into X, Y, or Z, let us know.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, until next time.
Thank you guys for listening. If you want to learn more and check out all of our awesome content, be sure to head to our website at moralrevolution.com and our socials, Instagram, Facebook, all of them. But before you leave, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, all of the things. We want you guys to come back and join us. We enjoyed having you. See you next time.